I've done all right since then. So the premise of the book, just as a you know introduction, is that when I was 9 years old, I'm from New York originally, and when I was nine, my mother moved with my family and the rest of us to a small town in the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. And while we were there for a variety of reasons, some of them having to do with our beliefs about the South and some of them having to do with sort of stereotypical Jewish anti-Semitism, my mother had us pretend not to be Jewish. So I was sent to an Episcopal school where I sang in the choir and I studied the Bible and I took communion. And so with that as sort of the basis of my childhood and my religious education being largely Christian, as an adult, I oftentimes found myself trying to decide if it was fair for myself to call myself Jewish. So what I did was I set out around the country and a little bit out of, as well as to Israel, and I visited a number of different Jewish communities and contexts and sort of interjected myself into them and tried to answer the title question, which is, am I a Jew? What I thought was apropos for tonight's reading was, so far we haven't talked about the most important thing in parenting, which is guilt. And I figured the portion from my book which was the most relevant was when I realized during the writing of the book was I had interviewed a great number of people, but I'd never asked my mother why she had decided to have us to fake being Christians. In fact, we fake being Unitarians, with the idea being that in the South, since no one knows what a Unitarian is and Southerners are polite, that no one would ask us, and that would be a good cover. So what I did during the creation of the book was I took my mother back to the neighborhood in Queens, Jamaica, Queens, that she grew up in, and we drove around and looked at the neighborhood, and I interviewed her. And that's the section that I'm going to, and tried to make her feel bad, basically. So that's the section I'm going to read. Yeah, am I a Jew? So Ma, you decided we were not going to be Jewish when we got to Mississippi. Yes. Do you remember how you decided what you were going to tell us? No. Did you give it any thought, what you might say to us about this? I was just going to make it a rule. You realize, Ma, that sort of seems irrational, right? I just don't remember. Well, I'm asking you to try to remember. I don't remember. You don't remember at all? That this was a new rule. Think. Yeah, I do remember that when we got to Mississippi that I told you and your brother that. What did you tell us? I said, don't tell anybody you're Jewish. But you have no real recollection of the conversation itself? Because that is like a huge moment in my life, and you don't remember it at all. I don't think there was one conversation. Really? How did it work? I think when you started school, I said, listen, just don't tell anyone you're Jewish. And how did we react? You didn't say anything when I said that. It didn't come up as a big conversation. We didn't react. Right. Is that basically it? Yeah. It was a gray fall day just after Thanksgiving, and my mother and I, flushed with tryptophan and boredom, were in my car driving along the pockmarked failure of the Grand Central Parkway in Queens. The occasional raindrop crashed against the windshield and perhaps a few wisps of early snow, and there was enough wind that I could see small, white-capped waves on Flushing Bay pushing the water toward LaGuardia Airport. Typically, I wouldn't have noticed these details of a road I had driven practically my entire life, but the fact that I had lured my mother into the car for a talk cast even small details into stark relief. We were like strangers introduced by a mutual acquaintance. You focus on the surroundings to avoid noticing the awkward pauses. If you have a tumor, you cut it out. Judaism was a tumor? Well, it can kill you. Is it so remarkable that my mother and I never spoke about the old days? I don't know. Discarding the past as a venerable American cultural tradition, on a par with corrupt electoral politics and the Super Bowl. I cannot be the only person who has found it easier to keep my memories at a healthy remove, although I do think that writing of these matters actually contributed to the distance. Press hard enough on the past, probe its details, verify its stories, facts, and lies, and your life becomes an object of study. This has its benefits. Emotional detachment allows one to substitute analysis for understanding. Again, I suspect I'm not alone in feeling this way. You know that Tom Lehrer song, right? And what my mother meant here was the refrain from Tom Lehrer's 1965 song National Brotherhood Week goes as follows. And I'm not going to sing it. No. The Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates the Jews. You know the Tom Lehrer song, right? I do. Well, what did he say? He said everybody hates the Jews. Well, exactly. It's true. We exited the parkway in the Jamaica section of Queens, the neighborhood where my mother was raised. I lived here, too, as a small boy after my mother left my father and moved back in with her parents. I was 6 when we moved again, first to Long Island for a couple of years and then to Mississippi. We turned onto Hillside Avenue, a forlorn commercial corridor of Caribbean roti shops, junk shops, dollar shops, laundries, used car lots, an incongruous strip of Chinese Ghanaian restaurants, furniture stores selling African trinkets, and Jamaican-themed wall coverings. My mother didn't seem to notice any of this. Her mind was taken with everything she knew, she once knew here. Memories lingered at each intersection of a playmate who once whose name escaped her, a clothing store where she and her mother shopped for dresses. I was particularly surprised at how well she knew her way around. Diane Ross, my mother, struggles to locate the bathroom in her house, but in Jamaica, she barked out terse and accurate directions. I found this amusing and said so, and she did her best to look look insulted. When did you decide that you were not going to tell people you were Jewish? I knew that anywhere I moved, I probably wasn't going to tell them. We turned off Hillside Avenue to see the apartment my mother lived in until she was 5. It was a second floor walk up on a narrow block, across from a Greek Orthodox church and a prison-like elementary school with its doors chained shut for the holiday. It's Thanksgiving. An Asian toddler done up in Yankee gear tottered down the street holding his father's hand. A Middle Eastern woman, head covered, hobbled by grocery bags and her long robes, passed them without a glance. 2 South Asian girls in skinny jeans and day-glow sneakers darted between the pedestrians on pink bicycles, ringing their bells. Latter-day melting pot kitsch, to be sure, but it helped me imagine my mother here as a little girl in the neighborhood's 1950s American heyday. The methods and expectations for absorbing newcomers into American society have changed dramatically over the years, and insisting on connections between generations of immigrants is its own form of kitsch. These folks might not want, as my mother clearly did, to be absorbed, nor given persistent racial biases might they be accepted even if they desired to be. My mother is white, and they are not. And even that statement isn't as simple as it might first appear. Karen Brodkin's 1998 book, How Jews Became White Folks, characterizes contemporary Jewish American history as one of racial change, in which prevailing classifications at a particular time have assigned Jews to the white race, and at other times have created an off-white race for Jews to inhabit. Brodkin, like my mother, grew up in 1950s outer borough New York, and she shared her sense of alienation from the mainstream culture when she writes, "My goal in life was to have a page boy hairstyle and to own a camel hair coat, like the pictures in 17 magazine. I thought of storybook and magazine people as the blonde people, a species for whom life came naturally and came easily, who inherited happiness as a birthright, and I wanted my family to be normal, the mythical normal America." This elusive normal America seemed to haunt not just Brodkin and my mother, but many American Jews of their generation. In part, I think it is a symptom of the relatively fragile role of U.S. Jews in post-World War II society. The memories of war and the Holocaust were fresh, but there were also more immediate domestic sources of anxiety. And she goes on to talk about the Rosenberg trial and not wanting people in her neighborhood to know about that. If you combine these influences from my mother's background, and perhaps her choice has become less than totally irrational, she wanted to be seen as a nice American girl from Queens, with all the ethnic and social privileges that implied. Yet she knew, with the conviction that youth brings to assessing certain truths, that she wasn't seen as any such thing. Did Grandpa ever talk about the Holocaust? No. Except to say that he got his mother and brother out and that they did not want to leave, and he knew what was coming, and the rest of his family was killed in the camps. But Ma, there was nothing like, this is the lesson of Judaism, one way or another. You know, it's like, it's bad to be a Jew, or it's good to be a Jew because everybody tries to kill us and we survive. No, I only grew up knowing that Jews were smarter than everybody else, and we were better. That was an a priori assumption. But Ma, that's why people remain Jewish, even if it's only cultural, because part of the religion is that you're better than everybody else. Yeah, well, you wanted to cast that off? Yes. You wanted to give up being the smartest guy in the room. I don't have to say I'm Jewish to be the smartest guy in the room. Jamaica High School, my mother's alma mater, is a statuesque red brick pile built in a Greek classical style with limestone columns, a bell tower, and an ornamental clock in the pediment. Perched atop a steep hill, the school's towering shade trees and decorative shrubbery slope downward to a pocket park complete with a duck pond. We parked at the curved lane cutting the park from the school and got out to walk, my mother snapping photos on her phone as we went. The sky darkened and I pulled on a warm cap and my mother flipped up the collar on her fur coat. The wind rose and the ducks in the pond squawked southward, honking in complaint. I read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. When was that, Ma? When I was 12 years old. That was it. I did not want to be a lampshade. I did not want my kids to be a lampshade. I knew I could not prevent it for me, but at least I could prevent it for my grandchildren. But you were living in an environment where being Jewish wasn't risky at all. It was post-World War II. I felt that it was risky. I felt that it could happen again. It happened with Torquemada. It happened in France. Every Western society has killed the Jews. But that sort of obsession with it, that belief that it will happen again, you understand that that's totally fucking Jewish, right? That is exactly what Jews think. Okay, so I decided to go a different direction with it. My grandfather emigrated to the United States from Germany in 1936. A family story, almost certainly apocryphal, helps explain the timing of his departure. He had a job working as a manager in a brewery in Berlin owned by a distant family relation. In each office in the brewery, there was a framed portrait of the family patriarch. My grandfather, who spoke no Yiddish, had a Christian girlfriend, was a member of the Ethical Culture Society, and ate his bratwurst without consideration or remorse, arrived to work one day to find that the portrait in his office had been replaced with one of Hitler. Some time passed, and my grandfather discovered another alteration to his office. He, too, had been replaced. A Nazi was sitting at his desk. Did you ever fuck up? Did you ever say to people, hey, when I was a kid and we were at Passover? No. You never let on. Nobody ever caught you. No. Were you concerned about that? Did you think about it? No. Well, why not? What was I supposed to be concerned about? That you might say something that would allow people to realize that you were Jewish? No, because I didn't think I had grown up particularly Jewish. You didn't think you'd grown up particularly Jewish. You were the child of a Jew who left Germany because of the Nazis. You went to Sunday school at the synagogue and to Barnard. What the fuck are you talking about? In 1955, my mother and her parents moved from the apartment on 161st Street in Jamaica to a two-bedroom brick A-frame with a finished basement in Jamaica Estates. Her father, my grandfather, Gerald Glazer, was born in 1902 in a village in eastern Germany that is today part of Poland. A Jewish organization helped him come to New York on a tourist visa in 1936. After that, he traveled by bus to Miami, then by boat to Havana, where he presented himself to the U.S. Embassy to secure his permanent residency. His first job in the United States was with the Easter Sausage Company, selling imported hams. After World War II, he went into business with his brother, again selling imported foodstuffs, made a decent living, and retired in 1973, the year I was born. He married my grandmother, Ethel, a Brooklyn girl from Russian stock in 1947, had two daughters, drank a beer every evening with dinner, and died when he was 99, 1 week after his brother passed. Grandma Ethel died of cancer when I was 5. I don't remember much about her, but I enjoy looking at the photos my mother has of her as a young woman, swimming with a bow somewhere upstate, on a Sunday drive with her friends in a convertible, with my grandfather on their wedding day. Jamaica Estates, one of New York City's first subdivisions, was built in 1904 in a patch of hardwood forest not far from Jamaica Bay. The Neighborhood Association's website notes with some pride that the city had initially considered converting the land into a large park. Ultimately, Forest Hills was selected for that, freeing the area to be developed to another vision, namely an upper-middle-class bedroom community designed to resemble the haute bourgeois paradise at Tuxedo Park in the Hudson Valley. The original Jamaica Estates covenant specified that homeowners spend no less than $6,000 on home construction, land not included. The company that developed the site went bankrupt in the 1920s, leaving the 275 homeowners in a difficult position. The restrictive covenants defining the neighborhood were set to expire, imperiling the single-family home dreams of its residents. In 1938, however, Jamaica Estates became the first neighborhood in New York City to receive a variance that limited the housing stock to detached single-family homes. Thanks to the wonders of prejudicial zoning, Jamaica Estates today remains largely free of apartment complexes and other déclassé multifamily dwellings, and to borrow the self-congratulatory language of the Neighborhood Association, still resembles a residential park. You've never regretted it? You've never felt like, well, here today with me might be the price that you're paying for it? No. Even now with me writing the book, I still think I did the right thing. I still think that it's a bad thing to be Jewish, and since none of us believe in religion or God, who gives a shit? But I'm going to write this book, and your friends might see it. They don't have to see the book. They'll forget about it. All they know is that you're an author and that you've got a book deal. Ma, every time they see me, they'll ask. You know that, right? So what are you going to do? Why did you tell them I was working on a book? She had told all my friends in Mississippi and family in Mississippi that I was writing a book, but she hadn't told them what the book was about. Because I'm proud of you. I know, but there's going to be a book about your choice. I don't expect anyone to read it. It's in the first chapter, Ma. That's usually the part people read. I don't expect anybody to buy it either, and I ain't buying it for them. The park-like atmosphere in Jamaica Estates persists to this day, but in ways that suggest foundering urban decline rather than suburban sumptuousness. The grand Tudors of the neighborhood survive, but they stand largely in disrepair or on the verge of collapse. More than a few appear to have been abandoned, their windows boarded up and papered with foreclosure or demolition orders. The canopy of shade trees has grown wild, with gnarled branches twisting dangerously through the power lines or collapsing nearly down to the street. Jamaica Estates is the feel of a broken man past his middle age, out of work and wrapped up in the bottle. This is natural to the aging of a neighborhood that lacks a proper role. People who could afford to maintain these sorts of homes today live either in Manhattan or in a real suburb, not in Queens. The middle-class Italians and Irish and secular Jews that populated the neighborhood departed long ago. There is a sizable Orthodox population here, part of what the New York Times in 2002 called the heredization of the borough, heredity meaning ultra-Orthodox. Those few that have stuck around are elderly, and their children and grandchildren live elsewhere. The first-generation immigrants who have replaced them lack both the resources and inclination to maintain the neighborhood. It has become a staging area for new Americans eager to move from first-generation poverty into the middle class. They, and perhaps the neighborhood, won't be here for long. Religion is bullshit. For that, it's okay to lie. No, Ma, it's never okay to lie. Don't you understand that? No. Everybody lies, Ma, but it's never okay. It's okay to decide you don't like Judaism and don't want to be Jewish. It's okay to leave the religion. It's not okay to do what you did. You have to if you're going to live among people in the South. You have to do it. I still think you have to. I don't think you're right. Well, I do. Do you ever have a specific definition of what you wanted us to be? Yeah, I wanted you to be an American boy. But I was. Yeah, only if you weren't Jewish. Thanks. Mm-hmm.